Hello, I'm your host, Brad Crandall, with a Merry Christmas from Monitor. Have you ever wondered how you'd spend Christmas if you were President of the United States? Well, just ahead, we'll find out how the holiday was celebrated at the Texas White House by President Johnson. First, Monitor music. Here's a song about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer from the two-piano team of Donner and Blitzen. Oh, that's not right. I mean Ferranti and Blitzen. Presidential Christmas like? Well, the man who observed the president's activities on this day is on our open line right now. He's NBC News correspondent Charles Murphy, who is in Austin, Texas. Charlie?
Hello.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, Brad.
How did President Johnson and his family spend Christmas Day?
Well, Brad, in the living room of the LBJ Ranch, there's a reindeer hat rack. The head of a reindeer.
Uh-huh.
It's used ordinarily for ornamentation and the storing of hats.
Mm-hmm.
On this occasion, the nose of the reindeer was painted red.
I see.
Holly and mistletoe, which come from the LBJ Ranch and other seasonal greenery, were used to manifest the spirit of Christmas there.
Mm-hmm.
The president did not go to church today, but he went to a midnight mass last night. He was in the ecumenical spirit, I suppose. He and his daughter Lucy and her husband Patrick Nugent, accompanied by Linda, the other daughter, and movie actor George Hamilton, went to midnight mass at the small Roman Catholic church at Stonewall, St. Francis Xavier.
Mm-hmm.
They did not come out today, but we understand that they spent the day traditionally and in privacy at the ranch.
I see. Does this seem in any way other, of course, than the ecumenism that you mentioned, seem very different from any other Christmases that the president and his family have observed?
No, it doesn't. They ordinarily open their gifts the night before Christmas, after
mm-hmm.
supper on Christmas Eve. We understand they did last night under the foot tree that's in the president's office, which adjoins the living quarters of the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the gifts, we haven't had a word on what was given, but probably they were rather simple gifts, as they are every year.
And generally fairly personal ones.
Yes.
Charlie, one dirty question, if I may. How does a reporter covering the president away from home spend his Christmas?
Well, on this occasion, many of the reporters brought their families here with them.
Sounds sensible.
hotel here in Austin, 60 miles east of the ranch. We're stationed at a hotel, one of two hotels, near the White House press office. As a result, it's a little less lonely with all the children running down the hall and the Christmas trees gracing some of the rooms.
Well, in that case, Charlie, there's no mockery needed when I say to you, Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Thank you. Charles Murphy of NBC News with the presidential party in Austin, Texas. And now here's Gunter Coleman with Wish Me a Rainbow.
Wish me a rainbow and wish me a star. All this you can give me wherever you are. And dreams for my pillow and stars for my eyes. And a masquerade for where our love wins first prize. Wish me red roses and yellow balloons and plenty friends willing to give dancing tunes. I want all these treasures, the most you can give. So wish me a rainbow that's long.
It's 16 minutes after the hour, and you're tuned to Monitor, where we're celebrating an old-fashioned Christmas. Well, we even have a Christmas tree in the studio. I don't think there's any mistletoe hung up anywhere. At least, I haven't been kissed yet.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Hi, this is Mel Torme. And as the co-composer of the few words I just sang, you must know how delightful it is for me to be able to say to you, through the facilities of Monitor, a very, very Merry Christmas and a happy and prosperous New Year to everyone within the sound of my voice. Oh, and by the way, you are on the Monitor Beacon.
This is Monitor. I'm your host, jolly old Brad Crandall. But first, jolly old Frank Sinatra with a Christmas waltz. What is?
Frosted window panes, candles gleaming inside, painted candy canes on the tree. Santa's on his way, he's filled his sleigh with things, things for you and for me. It's that time of year when the world falls in love. Every song you hear seems to say, Merry Christmas, may your new year dreams come. come true. Wishes you and yours the same thing, come true. And this song of mine in three-quarter time wishes you and yours, everyone,
Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. May your
Christmas.
At the Monitor Sports Desk this Christmas night, Mel Allen with Today in Sports.
Thanks a lot, my good friend Brad, for letting me visit your interesting pad. There's little sports to report this Christmas day. Instead, here's some greetings to those who play. To Jack Nicklaus and Arnie Palmer and Marlene Street, the female par charmer. To Gail Sayers and Big Jim Nance, who left the fences in quite a trance. To Vince Lombardi and old George Hallis, and young Tom Landry, who coaches Dallas. To Ara Parsegian and Allie Sherman, too, the highs and the lows of the year just through. To Wilt the Stilt and the Royals' Big O, poop-de-doo scorers who really make their teams go. To the Russells, Cassie and Bill, and Rick Barry, who's learning still. To all who play the hard court game, but especially to those we haven't even named. To racer Jack Brabham, a star from down under, and we mustn't forget their Roy Emerson and his thunder. To swimming's Don Scholander and Claudia Kalb, and all aqua artists who are really involved. To Frank Robinson and his mighty bat, and even to Pittsburgh's Harry the Hat. We say hello, too, to Ron LaRue and Walters Pennell and Segrin, too. To old Dick Tiger, light heavyweight boss. And special greetings to our friend, ailing Barney Ross. To Gordie Howe and Bobby Hull. You know what's happened to the Rangers is really something to mull. To Jean-Claude Keeley of La Belle France and all the skiers who seemingly prance, we wish them greetings this Christmas Day and many records when next they play. To Sandy Koufax, the ailing left arm pitcher, sidelined forever, but he made us all feel richer. To Jimmy Brown, motion picture star. If he acts like he runs, he'll go very far. To Stengel, DeRocher, O'Malley, and Weiss, DiMaggio, Williams, and Gregory Rice, Spiro and Spitz, and the Rams, George Allen, Governor Hayes, and David Matlin. To Peg Fleming, Dick Button, and Sleepy Jim, you showed us the manner in which to win. There's Obradovich, Kelly, and Sparry, and Purvis, none of whom ever made us very nervous. Hogan and Sneed, and Billy Casper, Boxing's Griffith, Lewis, and Dempsey the Master. Auerbach, Shays, Elgin, and West, there's not a doubt that they are the very best. The NCAA and the AAU, please get together, and we'll love both of you. We wish you both peace right away, and no better time than this Christmas Day. To Gary, Jola, Gowdy, Simpson, and Reese, may your blessings be many and always increase. To Roselle, Al Davis, and Terry Hanratty, Muzz and Lynn, the Bear, and Earl Batty, whatever the sport, whatever you play, we think of you all on this Christmas Day. To Bo and to Boom Boom and Cookie and the Rocket, to centers, forwards, and quarterbacks in the pocket, to passers and blockers and blasters and hitters, whatever you do, as long as you're with us, to Thomas and Boston, track men so rare, to Pele and Eusebio, a great soccer pair, to Mosbacher and Conacher, Greenberg and Hubble, the champagne of sportsmen, ah, you've made us bubble, and Arcaro and Atkinson and Walter Blum, we toast them all as a lot of fun. They've given us memories we'll never forget, They are the best there is, and on that you can bet. And what of Jim Ryan of the Flying Feet? Watching him is surely a major treat. To all the coaches and trainers, too, the top of the season we wish for you. To Drysdale and Wills and Terre Overnason and Brumel and Yazzie and, well, there's Mrs. Payson. Namath and Kemp and Lou Alcindor, Hank Aaron, Killebrew, and Paul Winder. Ash Ralston and Nancy Ritchie, the names of so many, they make me dizzy. So let me say this Christmas day, may the spirit keep you as you make your way. And now we must take our usual pause and turn the mic back to good old Crandall Claus. Merry Christmas!
Well, my wife waves her kerchief and I tip my hat. Mel Allen's a poet, and who'd have thought that? Here's Lena Horne, who bows to the inevitable and dashes off a musical note to the Weather Bureau. The opening line, get ready. Let it snow.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I've brought along some corn for popping. The lights will turn way down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight, say all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbye. But as long as you love me so, let it snow. Snow, let it snow. Yeah, as you love me so, I wanna see a lot of snow. How I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbye. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Let it snow, let it snow. I
want to
see a lot of snow, a lot of lovely, lovely snow. Let me have a little snow.
Hi, this is Joe Garagiola. If you're a football fan, then you're a cinch to be interested in the bowl games. Nobody can get to all of them, so why not have them come to you? NBC Radio will bring you a big football tripleheader on January 2nd. First from the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans, it's Nebraska against Alabama. Then from the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, the game between Southern California and Purdue.
I've got a friend who's going to be ready for those bowl games. He's just put a brass rail all the way around the front of his radio. Now, a traditional Christmas carol, Eugene Normandy conducting the Philadelphia Symphony Orchestra in We Three Kings of Orient Are. The three wise men set to music, and you're tuned to Monitor, your companion for the holiday weekend and every weekend, wherever you may be in the USA. Great Falls, Montana, the hub of the Golden Triangle, is served by KARR.
This is Julie Andrews with a Merry Christmas wish to all of you.
Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas.
Follow the action of the East-West Shrine football game next Saturday on the NBC Radio Network. Wondering what to give a hospitalized veteran this Christmas season? The VA says with a canteen coupon book, he can pick his own present from the gift shop right in the hospital itself. They're available in several sizes, 50 cents to $5, and you get them from the hospital's canteen.
Happy Holidays!
From WNBC, New York. Brad Crandall here for Monitor with a Merry Christmas and a ho, ho, ho and all that. And just ahead, a man who's been dreaming of a white Christmas for almost three decades. Live on Monitor's open line, Bing Crosby. First, Mitch Miller and his gang of tattletales with I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. Probably has had as much to do with White Christmases as the guy who wrote the song, Irving Berlin, maybe more over the years. And to tell us how he's spending Christmas this year, at the moment we have Bing Crosby with us on Monitor's open line from California. Good evening, Bing.
Merry Christmas, Brad.
And Merry Christmas to you, sir. How did you and the family spend Christmas Eve in Christmas Day? Do you mind telling me?
Oh, yes, Christmas Eve is the night we always reserve for the staff party that the people work for us, and it was quite international this year because we allow them each to bring two or three guests, and we have an English butler, a Japanese cook, an Irish nanny, and a French maid. So an international affair, and that was Christmas Eve, and then we all looked at the Hollywood Palace to see the children and Mrs. Crosby and myself singing Christmas carols, and then we went to bed. Not too late, got up, went to Mass, and came back, and that was the big time for opening the presents, and chaos reigned for about 3 hours around here.
Mm-hmm.
Just settled down now. It's simmering down a little.
You mean things have begun to calm just a little?
Just a little bit. It was pretty chaotic. Everybody opening their things, and these children are at an age now where they really get excited about Christmas. In fact, they've been excited for a couple of weeks. They decorated the tree, and they decorated the house using Christmas cards from last year, some of the pretty ones, and they put them on this styrofoam surface and put stars and bells and things around them, and they're very festive.
How old are the youngsters now, Bing?
Harry's 8, Mary Frances is 7,
And Nathaniel the Spy.
Mm-hmm.
Nice little spread there.
Yeah, that helps a lot. Well, that means all the breakable things were done by about 6:30, right?
That's right. Everything.
Bing, there's a rumor around you may be taking a shot at Vietnam next year. What do you think?
I'd like to go out there. There was some plans afoot not long ago for the Hollywood Palace to produce one of their regular shows in Vietnam, using the acts and using Vietnam as the background in the locale. And I think that plan is still alive. I hadn't heard anything about it lately, but I don't know what has happened so far.
Well, you know, I at risk of getting...
there with a real show, you know, because I don't have much of an act anymore. All my jokes are... the Second World War jokes. I don't think it'd work this year.
Well, Hope is still making out, you know.
Yeah, but he's got 7 or 8 writers.
Yeah.
It'd be easy for me if the Hollywood Palace would take a show over there with a lot of action. I could introduce them, sing a few songs, and do a few jokes, and give the boys, a real good hour and a half show. Instead of me just singing Sweet Leilani and swinging on a star, and then I'm out of gas.
Yeah, there's always that problem. I was wondering about Hope. You suppose he's going to go along as a fill-in for you?
Well, yeah, I could use him. I'll have to audition him a little.
What about the wife, Bing? You think she'll go along if you make this trip?
It'd be nice if she would, yeah. I think she's very good on her feet, and she likes to visit the hospitals, and she has a good personality for that kind of a duty.
Mm-hmm.
And drill. She mixes with people good, and she'd be a good... gal to have along on a function like this.
Well, it sounds like you got things pretty well taped, huh?
Yeah, we got it pretty well organized.
Bing, thank you very much for letting us butt in on your Christmas day.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be on Monitor. It's one of my favorite shows, and through the medium of Monitor gives me an opportunity to wish everybody, I know you have a vast audience, a very Merry Christmas and everything that they want for the new year.
All 21 of us, thank you, Bing.
You bet. Thank you a lot.
Good night and Merry Christmas.
Good night.
Bing Crosby, who just might be at next Christmas in Vietnam, but this Christmas at home. Right now, let's listen to Bingle himself singing his traditional holiday classic, White Christmas.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. And children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
May your days be merry and bright.
Brad Crandall here, your host for Monitor, and in case you've just joined us, here's wishing a happy holiday season for you and yours. Now, greetings from another friend.
This is Roddy McDowell wishing all the listeners to Monitor a very happy Christmas.
You're on the Monitor Beacon. In case you just joined us, here's wishing a happy holiday for you and yours. Now that second emotion. As Doris Day invites you to have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year, all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide. Next year, all our troubles will be miles away. Once again, as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who were dear to us will be near to us once more. Someday soon we all will be together, if the fates allow. Until then, we'll have to muddle through.
Monitor's man on the aisle, Leonard Probst, enters a dissenting vote on the new Neil Simon comedy, Star Spangled Girl, that opened on Broadway this week, and chats with author Simon about the production.
Playwright Neil Simon has the laughs, and he has the skill. He also has the funniest first act on Broadway this season in his new play, The Star Spangled Girl, which opened Wednesday night. But that's not enough. What he needs is a second act, and a third act would be nice for a Christmas present, too. But Mr. Simon is not in serious trouble. First of all, his mother likes it. I talked to her during the intermission opening night. She thought The Star Spangled Girl was sensational. Also, Mr. Simon must go to the bank each week with a lot of money to deposit. That's because he collects royalties from four shows now running on Broadway. He's the first writer without a collaborator to have that many shows on since Avery Hopwood did it 50 years ago. And before that, it was achieved by Clyde Fitch in 1901. Plot vanishes, and the clever jokes appear as gags because they don't have much to do with the story. There are three roles in the comedy. Anthony Perkins works so hard and yells so loud that he must be completely exhausted by the end of the performance. It's not fair to a good actor to cause him to overwork to cover up a weak storyline. Connie Stevens is cute and blonde, but yells so frequently that it becomes annoying. Richard Benjamin does have a change of pace, does not shout, and he comes off as the funniest of all. I talked to Neil Simon backstage before the show opened and tried to get him to tell us what The Star Spangled Girl is all about.
Well, it's sort of a conflict about the young, I really don't know, as a matter of fact. I generally have to wait until people tell me about it. And that's the honest truth, because I've never been able to describe any of my plays.
Is it about two men who publish a protest publication who meet up with a girl who doesn't believe in left-wing causes?
Exactly, yes. She is the all-American girl, and she is the Statue of Liberty come to life, so to speak. And these are two boys who are, they are good American citizens, but they are probing their finger at all the ills in America today.
When you write a play for Broadway, do you set out seeking to hit a certain audience, a certain individual in the audience? Or
yes, yes, me. That's the honest truth. I sit down, when I start to think of a play, I say, what would I like to go see on a given night in the theater? And I think of an idea that, not necessarily, I mean, do you sit down and think of it? It's probably been in my mind for quite some time. But I say, in selecting the one that I'm going to pick to write, I say, this is something that I think I would like to see, personally. And then I hope the general public would also like it.
Well, when you keep trying to hit yourself, do you find it more difficult to come up with a show that'll run each time? Do you find your own track record makes it more tough on you?
I'm in competition with myself. I hope that the critics and the people do not say, well, is this as good or not as good as The Odd Couple and the others? Mm. I think each play should be judged on its own. And I try my very best to forget what I've written before and start anew and try to make it as fresh as possible.
Well, how do you work in the comedy lines? Do you keep rewriting them after the play is developed?
Oh, constantly, yes. Right up until almost opening night, I keep going over every line that I possibly can. And the big thing to do is to take out the little laughs in the play, and that's almost as difficult as rewriting and putting in new ones.
What do you mean, take out the little laughs?
Well, it's the little laughs that hurt you. It's the big ones that that pay off the most.
Where was Neil Simon before he came to Broadway, and how did you get that play on Broadway?
Well, I was in the television and radio for about 12 years, but I always wanted to write a play, and I never thought I would. And I wrote the first one, Come Blow Your Horn, more or less as an exercise. I just wanted to see if I was capable of writing a play and would have the discipline to go through it. 20 versions later and about 16 producers later, I got it on Broadway. And I thought this would be the end of it because I just couldn't go through this every time. But I found that each consecutive play took less producers and fewer rewrites.
Is there any line that links all the Neil Simon comedies together?
I thought in the beginning there were because Come Blow Your Horn was the beginning of a boy growing out of his adolescence and suddenly becoming a man. And then Barefoot in the Park was the beginning days of his marriage, and then Odd Couple was the divorce. And the only thing I could write after that was about the death of a man, and I wasn't ready for that. So I got off that theme, and I just did what tickled my fancy at the moment, and that's The Star-Spangled Girl.
Playwright Neil Simon, 39 years old and Broadway's most successful comedy writer, talking about his new play, which I would guess will help his bank account, but not his reputation. This is Leonard Probst, NBC News, and that's it from Broadway.
A successful author on the subject of why he writes and what he writes about. And now, more Monitor music. Arthur Fiedler in the Boston Pops Orchestra with Winter Wonderland.
Thank you.
You're tuned to Monitor, and I'm Brad Crandall, reminding you that NBC News on the Hour is just ahead. And then we'll be back.
This is Bob, NBC Hope. NBC, that's no Bing Crosby, hoping that nothing is stirring all through your house this holiday season but happiness and good health. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you all.
Monroe and his orchestra entertain on the All-Star Parade of Bands, New Year's Eve, on the NBC Radio Network.
I love those J-I-N-G-L-E bells.
From WNBC, New York.